It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Mexico is doing very well because of the United States, and frankly, they have to stop the illegal immigration. We've run out of room. We have this ridiculous catch and release program where you catch them, and then you're supposed to release them, and you release them into our country. And we've been very, very tough, and the Border Patrol has been incredible, I have to tell you. The people in the Border Patrol, the job they do is unbelievable. ICE, the same thing, and law enforcement. But Mexico is going to have to do something, otherwise I'm closing the border. I'll just close the border.
So that was the president, and that's over the weekend what he's saying he's going to do. He's also saying he's going to cut off aid from 3 of the Central American countries that are doing nothing to stop immigrants from coming from their countries. In fact, we're understanding flyers are being handed out down there to tell them to come to America. You know, you can get in now. And so it's just getting worse. Another caravan's on its way. Department of Homeland Security has announced that March is on target to have 100,000 enter this year. This is on the pace. If we keep this pace, it'll be 1.2 million invading the country this year, and that doesn't even include the ones that we don't know about. Raul Ortiz, who was Deputy Chief Border Patrol Agent for the Rio Grande Valley sector, told the Epoch Times that there are 25,000 illegal aliens that they are certain successfully evaded Border Patrol just in one sector. We actually don't know who they are. So far here in South Texas, we've apprehended folks from 44 different countries. These are from the Middle East, Southeast Asia, Yemen, Iraq, Pakistan, Iran, you name it. And that's what we're dealing with on the southern border. It is absolutely incomprehensible. Even USA Today, even the other networks are beginning to talk about this. I don't know if they're using the emergency word. How could they possibly use that word that would affirm something that the president has declared? But they are declaring that it is a mess. Even USA Today, I was amazed when I read that article this morning. And so the president now is saying that he is considering closing the border. Of course, if he does that, that would stop travel for trade. People do, travel back and forth over that border each day to do business, to do work. That would affect American business, American trade. And so it's a very big move to do that. But what else are we going to do? You know, Congress won't do anything. The Senate does nothing. The House does nothing. They just sit and watch. They do nothing. It's just amazing to me. I guess they name bridges and roads, and they pass resolutions to make sure soldiers ignore the commander-in-chief's orders on allowing transgender soldiers in the military, which that's another story. By the way, 5 Republicans voted with the Democrats on that resolution on Friday that I told you about, and I'll tell you who they are in just a minute. I wasn't prepared to tell you in this segment, so I don't have the piece of paper in front of me to tell you who it was. I know it was Will Hurd from Texas. That's the one name I do remember. And so you need to remember that. That's unbelievable. While they're not doing anything on the border, they're ordering the Army and leaders in the Pentagon to ignore the president on transgender policy. It is really shocking. So there we have what's happening at the border. The president is doing, it seems to me, everything he can. We'll talk more in depth about that as it unfolds. You can imagine that Congress is not going to rush to help him. They never do. And it is really unfathomable, isn't it? I mean, it really is unfathomable, but we find ourselves in this place. We've been fighting for the government to enforce our immigration laws for at least 20 years, at least since George W. Bush was in office. I remember this fight so well. he almost led the charge passing so-called comprehensive immigration reform, which meant bad policy, which meant amnesty for thousands of people. And if it weren't for the American people rising up then, when George W. Bush was president, we would have had that bad policy. Lindsey Graham led the fight on that one. And so, and they continue to ignore the American people. Then President Trump ran on building a wall and securing and enforcing our immigration laws. And he won, I think, primarily because of his promise to do that. And still, it's only getting worse on the border, and still the Congress refuses to do anything. Both sides of the aisle. I mean, it is really amazing. We'll come back to that. You know we will. Every day we talk about it somewhat. There was an amazing accusation that came out over the weekend, and it was from a Democrat who was in New Mexico. She is the attorney general, or candidate for attorney general, back in 2014, Lucy Flores. She was a Nevada assemblywoman, and I'll let you hear what she says about Joe Biden. Here it is, clip six.
What are you looking for from the vice president here, Vice President Biden? Are you looking for an apology? Are you looking for him to change his behavior? What's the end game here? What do you want?
Absolutely. Yes, of course I want him to change his behavior, and I want him to acknowledge that it was wrong. And I want this to be a bigger discussion about how there is no accountability structure within our political space, either for instances in which women feel that there was inappropriate behavior, or more serious instances in allegations of sexual assault, et cetera. We are not protected in politics. And frankly, on a much larger scale, we also need to have a conversation about powerful men feeling that they have the right to invade a woman's space whenever they'd like. This really is about women feeling like we have agency. If we don't want you to touch us, then don't touch us. If there isn't a personal relationship, if there isn't a history there, if this is inappropriate, if this same situation occurred in a work setting and a CEO came up to a female staffer and did the exact same thing, that staffer would be able to complain to someone. Mm-hmm. That staffer would say, this was very weird, and it made me feel very uncomfortable, and he needs to stop doing this. And if that CEO continued that behavior, and that was a pattern in practice, that would be a sexual harassment claim.
Assemblywoman.
So that, there needs to be that level of accountability in our political system, and also just generally speaking now as we move forward, women should have agency in their own personal space and on their own bodies.
Assemblywoman Flores, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Okay, so Lucy Flores, she didn't really tell her story there, as I expected, but her story was that as they were getting ready to go out on stage, Joe Biden came up behind her, put his hands on her shoulders, and came up really close to her behind and planted his face in her hair, and he smelled her hair, and then planted a very long kiss on the back of her head. She didn't even know him. And that may sound strange. You know, I'm a skeptic when it comes to women's, the Me Too movement, I'm not a fan. I just think women have become whiners. That's really my basic feeling. But the problem is that sometimes this is legitimate. Sometimes there's a legitimate problem with men using their authority or their power to say and do and touch in ways they should not. They have no right to do. And you might be skeptical of that. Lucy Flores, of course, is a Democrat in Joe Biden's party. She has nothing politically to gain by coming out and telling this story. And the thing of it is, the story has been affirmed in photos. I may never have even told you about this, but I should tell you about it. You can see it online. There is a series of photos and videos of Joe Biden touching women at public functions. I mean, and even little girls, and I'm not talking about sexually, although you could argue, you know, there's a line. You could see the picture of him standing behind Defense Secretary Ash Carter's wife at his swearing-in, where he's got his hands on both of her shoulders, and he's leaning into her hair, very close, smelling and sniffing and whatever else he's doing. And if that were the only time, you would say, well, they're good friends, and he's what? What is he doing? I don't know. It hints at sexuality. It hints at something untoward. It does. And so now Lucy's saying that he's doing the same thing to her, and we know he has a history of doing this. You know, I also know because a Secret Service agent's female who guarded Joe Biden, this is kind of a icky story, but I'm going to tell you, a female Secret Service agents guarding Joe Biden when he was vice president reported that he would always swim in the nude, and they asked him not to. They collectively said, please, please don't do that, and he refused to listen to them. And so I'm telling you, there's something not right with the way Joe Biden treats women. And you could see those pictures if you just Google it on Facebook. Good luck doing that. If you just Google it, you can see a whole series. I mean, it's like epidemic. It's not just this woman, Flores. So that's just something that we need to know. And I think others have said, well, it would have come out if he had faded into the sunset. He probably could have gotten away with that odd behavior. The odd was probably as innocuous as I know how to call it. But because he's decided, it looks like he's indicating he's going to run again, this stuff's going to be, it's going to be made public. I predict he's going to drop out. Yeah, I do. I just don't think he's going to go because he knows there's stuff out there that will be used against him. And we'll see what happens with that. All right. So on the Russian collusion story, Adam Schiff was speaking to his fellow House members, shaming them for daring to ask him to step aside, and this is what he said.
My colleagues may think it's okay that the Russians offered dirt on a Democratic candidate for president as part of what was described as the Russian government's effort to help the Trump campaign. You might think that's okay. You might think it's okay that their only disappointment after that meeting was that the dirt they received on Hillary Clinton wasn't better. But I don't think it's okay. I think it's immoral. I think it's unethical, I think it's unpatriotic, and yes, I think it's corrupt and evidence of collusion.
All right, so let's think about this for a second, for the minute that I have to think about this with you. Adam Schiff is talking about the meeting in the Trump Tower with the Russian attorney, which turns out she was working for Fusion GPS. The company that worked with Hillary and the DNC to create that opposition research tabloid dossier on President Trump, the attorney that met with Don Jr. at Trump Tower, worked for Fusion GPS. And the bait, allegedly, is that she said she might have some dirt on Hillary. So they met with her. Nothing came from that meeting. But based on that, by the way, that's not illegal. That's what all candidates do, for the most part, against each other, except highly principled people don't look for dirt on each other, but most generally they do. Stuff that's true, you do want to expose about your opposition. There's nothing wrong with that. So Adam Schiff is saying that he's accusing the Republicans, Don Jr., of, he was offered dirt on Hillary. They had a meeting because this Russian attorney said that there was potentially dirt on Hillary. That's immoral. It's unethical. It's what else did he say? It's a collusion. It's evidence of collusion. Really? So it was the Russians who cooperated with Fusion GPS in part to create this phony dossier on President Trump. That's what this whole story is about. That's what the nut of the truth here is. So, of course, Adam Schiff is accusing. It's like I said, the left always does that. They accuse their enemies of doing exactly what they are doing. And by the way, there's so much more to say about that. I'm going to have to come back to it. But I do want to say this. A new text between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page show that Barack Obama was directly involved in this. You probably haven't heard this anywhere. Right? The texts go like this. Peter Strzok, talking points for Director Comey. Lisa Page, yes. Because POTUS wants to know everything we are doing. President of the United States, Barack Obama, wants to know everything we're doing. Speaking to Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, central characters in the dossier and the plan to take down Donald Trump. I wonder what's going to happen with that bit of information. All right, when we come back, I want to talk to you about Obamacare and the president's plan to do away with it and replace it. The Justice Department siding with the judge in Texas. It's an incredible story, will have effect on all of us. Stay tuned.
Here's Walker Wildman for Redeem Clean Laundry Products. Not only do you get a great product and you get to obviously clean your clothes, get the stains out and use a multi-surface cleaner to clean your countertops and use the dryer sheets, you're doing all of this and the money's going to support the work of American Family Association.
Redeem Clean Laundry products were developed by AFA supporters Len Ingram and Jim Duncan to assist in funding the mission of the American Family Association. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made right here in the United States.
The great thing about Redeem Clean is not only is the product great, but it goes to support a great cause, and that is the work of American Family Association.
For clean laundry and a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Visit redeemclean.afastore.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Kirstjen Nielsen, the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. Secretary Nielsen is tasked with helping protect our country and ensuring the safety of U.S. citizens. Psalm 32:7 reminds us of the protection we seek from God. You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask you to lift up Secretary Nielsen as she works to keep our nation safe. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Feathers ruffled in San Antonio. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Outrage and opposition is growing after the San Antonio City Council banned Chick-fil-A from opening a restaurant at the local airport. City leaders accused the restaurant chain of being a symbol of hate and supporting anti-gay groups like the Salvation Army.
I find it totally objectionable, unconscionable, that they would target a business for their deeply held religious beliefs.
Texas Congressman Chip Roy sent a letter to the City Council demanding answers.
I wanted San Antonio to answer what it is they want to accomplish by targeting an organization, a business, that is as important to the United States and our communities as is Chick-fil-A, simply because of their deeply held religious beliefs.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has launched an investigation to determine if the city council violated state laws governing religious liberty. He called the city's behavior towards Chick-fil-A intolerant and discriminatory. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I want to get to the issue of health care. The president this week said he wants the courts to strike down Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. But to be fair, Senator, you want to replace Obamacare, too. You want to replace it with Medicare for All, this government-run, government-financed program. So if the courts strike right. down the ACA, does that ultimately help you?
No. No. Look, yes, Trump has an idea on health care. His idea is to throw 32 million Americans off of the health insurance they have, doing away with insurance for kids who are 26 years of age or younger who are on their parents' plans. Doing away with the protections that the ACA has for pre-existing conditions, Margaret. That means if you have cancer, you have heart disease, you have diabetes. If Trump gets his way, the cost of health insurance for you will be so high that many people literally will not be able to afford it. Thousands of people will literally die. That's Trump's health insurance plan. My plan's just a little bit different. I think we should join the rest of the industrialized world, guarantee health care to all people as a right, and the absurdity of the United States spending twice as much per capita on health care as any other nation, while our life expectancy is actually going down and our health care outcomes are worse than many other countries. And by the way, we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs.
Bernie Sanders, well, compelling. Man, I'm frightened. I mean, think about that. If we do away with Obamacare, kids 26 won't have health care anymore because they depend on their parents. And people with pre-existing conditions, and what, 32 million people will be thrown off of insurance. It sounds, people will die, says Bernie Sanders. Well, a lot has been happening on the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. It happened last week. We touched on it, but there's much more to be told. A judge in Texas, we're going to get to that in just a second. I actually won't get into that until I introduce our guest. Let me just say that in terms of what's happening in the Congress, Steny Hoyer has announced that tomorrow the House is going to consider a resolution to condemn the Trump administration's actions to undermine health care for millions of Americans. And so you see, it's heating up. You heard that the president says that the Republicans are going to become the party of health care. You see that Republicans are freaking out. How could he do this? We're on a roll here with the unfolding of the Mueller report and no collusion. And now you want to jump into health care, which is the reason we lost 2018. So that's the way the story goes. Well, I've invited a guest to join us this morning. You're familiar with him, but you might not know that as Attorney General for the state of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli really led the charge to do away with, to stop, to halt, to obstruct anything he could, the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, and has recently been very involved in this latest successful, nearly successful attempt to do away with it completely. And he joins us this morning. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. You know, Ken, it's kind of hard. You know, there's so many issues, and I would really like it, before we talk about the now, to take us back in time. Because when you were Attorney General for Virginia, what were you guys trying to do? At what stage in this Affordable Health Care Act battle?
Well, we filed our suit in Virginia 35 minutes after the president signed the bill. So we didn't waste any time.
No, I'd say not.
And we had the bill held unconstitutional because it was unconstitutional, but because the Congress was trying to direct people, order people to buy a product, order them into commerce. That was the argument. And ultimately, when it all got to the Supreme Court, that argument on the part of the states was upheld. Congress couldn't order people to buy a product, but the Chief Justice switched sides, joined the liberals, and declared the whole thing a tax because it raised revenue. Well, in President Trump's 2017 tax reform bill, they eliminated the revenue. They didn't get rid of the individual mandate. You hear people talk about that quite a bit. That's still in the law. What's no longer there is any financial penalty for disobeying the individual mandate. So it's effectively a nullity. And thus, the argument, so far successful in one district court by the states led by Ken Paxton of Texas, is that with no revenue being raised, it's no longer a tax, and there's no longer any constitutional basis for it to exist, which is, as a simple matter of reading the Supreme Court's Obamacare decision and applying it to the law now that the penalty was set to $0, is very clearly correct. And it is a very powerful move by the Trump administration to join that argument, and not only that it's unconstitutional, but also that without the individual mandate effective, the whole thing falls. And for the people screaming about that argument, that's the argument that the administration under President Obama made. They played a sort of all-or-nothing game with the court. If you do this, court, you have to take the whole thing out. And Chief Justice, of course, didn't do that. It gave the states the choice on Medicaid expansion, but that was it. So that's where we are from a court standpoint.
So there are two different efforts then by attorneys general, right? The one that you filed 35 minutes after the bill was signed by Congress.
Right.
And then now this second is different.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it's really, honestly, a kind of a direct in your face to John Roberts, is it not?
Well, no, you could say they're following the roadmap he laid out. He said if it raises revenue, it's under the taxing power of the Congress. And so it stands. And now you're going to go back to him and say, well, it doesn't raise revenue anymore, Chief, Mr. Chief Justice. So you said it's not a tax, and there's no other basis to uphold it, on which to uphold it.
Yeah.
The real challenge now isn't legal. It's more practical. I tell young lawyers that they were taught the burden of proof. We've all heard the burden of proof. You watch cop shows, it's beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Yeah.
Well, I tell them about something that I call the burden of persuasion. You've got to get a live human being, judge or member of a jury, to decide you've met your burden of proof. And the challenge in this case is no longer the law, in my view. It's the burden of persuasion, not the burden of proof. It's getting human beings 6 years after the implementation of Obamacare to actually rip it out. Because they don't get to replace it. They're not a legislature. And you heard Bernie Sanders. You quoted him this weekend. Oh, these 32 million people, they're going to be thrown off their insurance. You mean the insurance they were going to get to keep with Obamacare and their doctor, which they were going to get to keep under Obamacare, thrown off that insurance? So he lied to us then. Why wouldn't he be lying to us now?
Yeah.
And that's where this is headed. And I heard a great quip this weekend. I was at FreedomWorks this weekend, and somebody said very wisely, it was Andy Biggs, it was Congressman Andy Biggs, in the repair and replace discussion. He said, you know, if you remove cancer, you don't replace it. We should just repeal it. You don't need to replace this with anything. The problem with the growing problem with the healthcare system is the further invasion of the government into the system. We don't have a healthcare market because of all of this. We've got to get the government out of it. And this step by the Trump administration to join the successful states in ripping out Obamacare is a very positive step to finally undo the damage of Obamacare to our healthcare system.
And Ken, I want to get into the nuts and bolts of Obamacare, because I know a lot about that. You just tipped the iceberg there for a second.
Yeah, I actually read the bill. Unlike the people who voted for it, you know,
you
if you're going to file a lawsuit on it, you really do need to read it.
Well, I want to get back. Oh, that would be a novel thought on so many things. But before we talk about the implications and really, you know, the vacuum and whatever else, I want to follow the track of the legislative judicial process here, because you guys, it won in a court in Texas. This judge agreed with your finding that it needed to be thrown out in its entirety. Okay, so then the Justice Department last week, my understanding is that some people in the Justice Department were totally surprised when somebody at Justice weighed in on the side of the Texas judge, saying, yes, we actually agree. It should be thrown out in its entirety. Do you know what the story is behind what happened at Justice and why the divide?
I do not. You know, career lawyers typically believe that they're supposed to defend everything to the hilt. And but the reality is you can make a political decision, and I don't mean to make that sound crass. As I said, Sandy, earlier, on the letter of the law, all they've done here is follow the roadmap laid out for them by the Chief Justice in the original Obamacare case. And it's really no more complicated than that. And so there's plenty of legal basis for the Trump administration to do what they've done. It is a big deal in that burden of persuasion for the federal government to weigh in on the other side. That is a big deal. That affects how judges view this and what they're willing to do, even though it doesn't change the law at all. So now it'll go to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and there'll be a three-judge panel, and it can then either be heard en banc by the whole Fifth Circuit or go on to the Supreme Court. In my view, we want it to go straight to the Supreme Court, because the sooner it gets there, the better.
Do you have any doubt? You know, the Fifth Circuit is probably the most conservative circuit that we have in the United States. Do you have confidence that they are actually going to see it the way of the Texas judge and the Justice Department?
I think the odds are better than even. I wouldn't go a lot farther than that. But I would say that if they do that, then it shores up the possibility at the Supreme Court level that the same thing would happen.
Yeah. Well, let's go back now to the practical matter of it, because honestly, Ken, and I've always thought, of course, I think I'm not an expert in healthcare, but in general, my thoughts are that the market should be stepping in here to fill in the gap.
Oh, you crazy, radical woman.
Yeah, yes, I know. I've been called that before.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, but no, seriously, I don't. The market is really clever. Let them go at it. I'm with you. Let the federal government get out of the business of providing health care and let the market have at it. They'll compete with each other.
Well, that isn't even providing health care. The federal government doesn't provide health care. There's a distinction. Health insurance is not health care. And
that's true.
Let's take Medicaid, the government welfare program for the poor, for health care. Just because the Commonwealth of Virginia has $7 billion a year to spend, half of it from the federal government, roughly, on health care for poor people, doesn't mean there are doctors to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that Carilion Healthcare System will accept Medicaid. It doesn't mean that your local town doctor will take Medicaid. That's health care. And Medicaid is such a pain in the tail for those organizations. Getting medical providers in using Virginia, which I know best for obvious reasons, is very difficult to do. And Obamacare did not increase the availability of medical care. It decreased the availability of medical care. That's what you never hear Bernie Sanders rattling on about that. One of the things Obamacare has done is driven medical providers, doctors in particular, out of the profession. One statistic very little seen or read about is that doctors used to, over half of doctors, like 60% of them, used to urge their children into medicine. Remember, has been cut by half, down to around 30% of doctors now urge their children to go into medicine because they deem it a miserable profession. And over 40% of all the money spent in the medical field is spent just on administrative costs. So
you know,
back
I just had
to
a,
your point,
yeah,
you
go
get
ahead.
To a market and you cut all that stuff out, there's an enormous amount, over 40%, available to of costs to be cut without affecting medical care.
Yeah.
But you aren't going to do that until you wipe out all of the massive layers of rules, regulations, et cetera, and get to what you said, Sandy, is a true free market.
You know, I just had we just had company a couple of weeks ago, a doctor friend and his wife who retired way too early, very capable, so bright. And I asked him, why did you step aside so early? And he said, the paperwork was killing me. He said, I just couldn't do it.
Medicine anymore.
Yes, exactly. And he's just one. I recognize that this is epidemic among doctors. So your point is, it's one thing to have a piece of paper that says you are covered for this, that, and the other. It's quite another thing to actually find a doctor who will treat you or a hospital
right.
who can take you. And I
don't mean this the way it sounds, but there'll be doctors, but you aren't going to be able to pronounce their names because they're going to come from other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And the quality is going to go down. When I got into law school more than a quarter century ago.
Can you hold that thought? Yeah. Because the break is coming here and I want to hear what you have to say. Ken Cuccinelli is my guest again. He was really, I think, in large part, the architect of the challenge to Obamacare that's making its way through the courts, will soon be in the Fifth Circuit. He's been following this and tracking and fighting it since its inception. When we come back, let's talk about the practical matter of it. Who is covered? What is the state of health care right now in this country? We'll do that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In recent weeks, much of the media attention has rightly focused on the horrific terrorist attack on two Muslim mosques in New Zealand. Noticeably absent, however, was any reporting in the legacy media concerning the genocide of Christians that is currently taking place at the hands of Muslims in Nigeria. Over 130 Christians have been killed by Muslims in Nigeria since February of this year. Over 60,000 Christians have been killed by Muslims in Nigeria since 2001. Why won't the media report on this? By refusing to expose this evil, the media shows its complicity.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
As a 10-year-old boy, my dad and our whole family started back to church.
Bert Harper on the Word of God.
And the church I went to, the pastor really preached the Word of God with conviction. I knew that it was a book that we could depend upon and live our lives by. And I hope I bring that same passion into exploring the Word.
Exploring the Word with Bert Harper and Alex McFarland. Weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. A court of appeals has already essentially declared Obamacare unconstitutional, and it's likely the Supreme Court will agree. Now the conversation is over what should replace it. The answer is nothing. Or better, what should replace it is the free market. Let's get government out of the way and turn insurance companies loose to offer any kind of policies they want to consumers. That makes consumers the ultimate decision makers, exactly how it ought to be in a free society. The only role for government in healthcare should be to enforce contracts. If you pay for health coverage you don't get, government's job is to make the insurance company keep its end of the deal. Government should not be telling insurance companies what kind of things they have to offer or can't offer. That's none of government's business. Let's put ordinary Americans in charge of America's healthcare.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Among the most ominous features of the Chinese Communist Party's intensifying totalitarianism is the advent of its so-called social credit score. Think George Orwell on steroids. By using a combination of tens of millions of surveillance cameras, artificial intelligence to mine the camera's data streams, and advances in the ability to recognize individuals by their faces or even how they walk, China's regime seeks to monitor literally everyone in the country. Those who don't conform to its dictates get a bad social credit score and can be denied travel, education, jobs, housing, etc., or imprisoned. A particular target are religious minorities. The Financial Times reported last week that Chinese companies involved in this appalling abuse of technology and intent on exporting it elsewhere are tapping U.S. capital markets and indexes to get funding from American institutional and other investors. That must stop. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
If the Supreme Court rules that Obamacare is out, we will have a plan that's far better. We are going to be the Republicans, the party of great health care. The Democrats are, they've let you down.
If the Republican Party wants to be, in Donald Trump's words, the party of health care, God help the middle class. This is the party of health care? This Republican Party? Come on. You can't undo all the health care for tens of millions.
Okay, but maybe you can. Sandy Rios back with you. Ken Cuccinelli's with me, and he has been one of the drivers of really completely obliterating the Affordable Health Care Act. And as we were talking on the other side of the break, Ken, it occurred to me, if you guys are successful in the Fifth Circuit Court and they agree with you, and it goes to the Supreme Court, and this thing is thrown out root and branch, would that, practically speaking, do away with all that terrible paperwork that is causing doctors to leave the profession?
No. It would help, but let's face it, there would be some confusion in some quarters initially as particularly insurance companies adjust. You and I wouldn't notice anything, really. But the insurance companies sure would. And look, they're part of the problem. They helped draw this up. They've had record profits. And I'm not against profits. I'm against them going and guaranteeing their profits by getting the government to order everyone to buy their product.
Well, and hurting people and their health care.
Yes, absolutely.
And making a profit.
Again, remember what Obama said, and Bernie Sanders too. You want your doctor, you'll be able to keep them. Well, that was a lie. You want your insurance, you'll be able to keep it. That was a lie. If that's important to people, to actually having choice, and every study shows the most important thing to people about healthcare is them being able to control it, them being able to make their own choices, and Obamacare has eliminated choice after choice after choice. People do have health insurance, not health care, like Bernie Sanders said, but their deductibles, to quote Bernie, are huge. And the cost of that insurance has gone through the roof. So as a practical matter, they actually have less health, less dollars to spend on health care because it's being swallowed up by Obamacare's costs.
So, Ken, let's talk about just how this has affected people. I have general impressions. It seems to me most middle-class families have been clobbered by what you just described, those incredibly
absolutely
high
clobbered
deductibles. Yeah, but it seems like a lot of people who are lower income or no income have benefited because they suddenly have a piece of paper that says they have health care. And that's probably a lot of people. I've heard 22 million. I don't know if you know what the estimate is that are still on Obamacare.
Well, it depends who you ask. You listen to Bernie, it's 32 million. And, the problem, let's even just start with his, even though we both know it's kind of a joke. He said, these people up to 26, right, these poor 25-year-old children, who, by the way, made the decision before it was mandated that they be on somebody's health insurance, that made the decision that they were so healthy that their money was, they were better off with their money in their pocket than buying health insurance. What's wrong with that choice? And yet we have now taken it from them. They don't have that choice anymore. And, that was a rational economic decision that they could, their life was better without it. The other thing, again, back to the Bernie Sanders number, is so many of these people have what he calls health insurance is really just expanded Medicaid rolls. It's just welfare. And Oregon, those noted right-wingers in the Oregon state government, did a study a number of years back that found that in their Medicaid program, people with no health care whatsoever actually had better health care outcomes than the ones on Medicaid. And that's counterintuitive, but nothing was better than Medicaid. But don't worry, they're spending billions of dollars on Medicaid so they can make people actually worse off by their own study. The health insurance program dictated by the government doesn't work, and it doesn't provide health care. We would be better off, Sandy, if the government simply wrote a check or gave a voucher to every poor family, not able-bodied adults, none of those, to every poor family for health care every year. Just wrote them a check. We'd be better if they gave them the cash and let them go spend it, and the main set of regulations that would exist is simply to require healthcare providers to provide the same price to everybody and to show, publicize their outcomes. If you did those two things, you would suddenly have a free market in healthcare because the most important thing is price. And today, if you go to your doctor and say, how much is X? They can't even tell you. Isn't they won't tell you. They can't tell you. Because they don't know. They don't know their own prices. And if the provider doesn't even know their own price, we don't have a market in healthcare. And that's what's most broken of all. Because you are right. Once that information is being shared, they're going to compete. They're going to suddenly compete like every other industry. And we're going to drive prices down, and we're going to drive the administrative costs out. And we're going to stop driving doctors out of the profession of medicine, because they'll actually be able to practice medicine instead of being an insurance industry paper pusher again.
Ken, the one area that I don't need to explain to you, and this is the theme that the Democrats hit in the 2018 election. In fact, let me just play a clip. This is James Clyburn. He was asked a question last week. Well, I'll just let him answer it, and you'll hear what he has to say. Clip 14.
I believe that the Mueller report has been done. That's a chapter that's closed. And I think that last night, this administration opened a new chapter when it moved to completely invalidate the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, so the point is that James Clyburn and the other Democrats are gleeful. They think this is great. Republicans are quaking in their boots. And one of the things they ran on, Ken, as you know, was the whole issue justifiably concerning the pre-existing conditions. Now, I have heard many, and the uptick to, you know, establishing the Affordable Health Care Act, I had a lot of conversations with doctors and others, and I know that there were provisions that were shared about how to take care of pre-existing conditions, short of factoring them into the general health care coverage for the population. Can you explain what your position on that, and what you would do about that?
Well, this is an area where, we sort of leave what I'll call purist free market principles, largely because of the political pressure. And it's understandable. Healthcare is a very emotional subject for people, and it really can often override, you know, cold-hearted analysis, if you will. The best idea I've heard in this area is actually, shockingly, from the states. A number of states have experimented with and implemented successfully what I'll call high-risk pools, including pre-existing conditions. So they group fund, they spread the cost of the subsidy necessary to make health insurance, not health care, health insurance affordable for people with pre-existing conditions. And that has proven very effective when they do it on a group basis. Because even with people with pre-existing conditions, you end up spreading the risk, which is the value of a good functioning insurance market, right? And so the states have taken advantage of that. That opportunity continues to exist. It should not be done at the federal level. At worst, the federal government should say, we'll do X unless a state implements a high-risk pool. And they shouldn't, you know, go the Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama route and put a bazillion rules on that. They should just say, you've got to set up a pool for this purpose in your state. And look, they're going to be different in different states. There'll be more or less coverage in various states. But leave it to the states to do it. And even this, let's concede, is a departure from free market principles. But I think it's one that the Democrats have successfully changed the culture of expectations on this point, that politically it wouldn't be possible to put in place a replacement for Obamacare or to describe a world after Obamacare without dealing with pre-existing conditions.
And the idea, as I understand it, Ken, is that when you take out the pre-existing conditions, high-risk people, and put them in a separate pool, and you do subsidize that pool. So it makes it, and they share, as you said, it's kind of a sharing, so it's not such a big hit. But you take them out of the general population, which has regular problems that are not catastrophic, mm-hmm. Then you don't, the result is that the regular population is not paying, will not be paying exorbitant costs to cover what will be catastrophic for that pool of people that have those kinds of problems. So it makes sure that they are covered, but it doesn't then damage the ability of the rest of the population to afford health care. That's my understanding of it anyway.
Yeah, that is the idea. I mean, let's face it, it's essentially a tax by regulation. We're all going to pay into that. Let's not beat around the bush on that. But it is a much better structure to handle at the state level. and it is a much better structure than the behemoth that Obamacare is. The trade-off of getting rid of Obamacare and having to set up those high-risk pools in exchange is a great deal for for us. I mean, you know, you hear Chuck Schumer talk about the middle class. The middle class have been hammered by Obamacare, hammered by it.
Yep, absolutely.
They're the ones whose deductibles have gone through the roof and the cost of whose insurance has gone through the roof as well. At the same time.
I'm sorry. You're so polite, and I'm so polite. I lost you. But Ken, we only have 3 minutes left, and I do want you to put on, if you would, you ran for governor, you ran for attorney general in Virginia. You know a lot about politics. Some are bemoaning the fact that this is terrible politics. How could the president bring this losing issue up right now, right before 2020? What is he thinking? I'd like to know what you think about that.
Well, Republicans are moaning and gnashing their teeth because they're more coward than they are bold. And what I mean by that is you wonder why you said root and branch. That's the old Mitch McConnell quote. We're going to pull out Obamacare root and branch. Well, once he had our votes, he didn't really care about that anymore. In fact, he was afraid of it because anything you do will generate opposition. And opposition is a stronger, more powerful feeling that people respond to than support. And healthcare is sufficiently complicated. It's not this A or B type of decision. There's an infinite number of combinations of policies that can happen here. So you're always going to have more people opposing what you're doing than supporting it. The real issue is, what is the plurality? Where do the most people support? This is just pure politics. And I would argue that the president is consistent with his boldness. Whatever one may think of this president, he is not a wallflower. And he has put this front and center, and he is forcing Republicans to confront health care. They didn't do it for 6 years when they had George Bush as president in the House and the Senate. They didn't do it the last 2 years, even though this president was pushing them when they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And so now he's pushing them to do it, even though they don't have the House. And there, you can't just sit on your hands and do nothing. And the Republicans have said, Mr. President, we want you to come up with it. From my perspective, I'm happy with that. I am much more comfortable with what is likely to come out of a Trump administration than I am out of, say, a Republican study committee or something.
Yes,
because they tend to be cowards over there.
Oh, yes, they do. And as a matter of fact, in my inbox this morning, was an article saying that Trump didn't just do this by the seat of his pants, which is what everyone always accuses him of, that the administration has been working with three different think tanks over the course of the last several months to come up with a health care plan. So he's not been, they never give him as much credit as they should, Ken.
Right. Yeah. Well, they never want to give him any credit, but that's, and I think this president, now that he's thrown down the gauntlet, you know, whether he succeeds or not, he is never not charged ahead once he's thrown down a gauntlet like this.
Yep,
so I expect great things out of the administration. I'm very glad to see them in the case with Texas and the other states finally doing what the Republicans promised so long ago, and that's ripping out Obamacare by the roots.
Me too. Ken Cuccinelli, SenateConservatives.org, by the way. SenateConservatives.org, Senate Conservatives Fund.
Thanks,
we didn't talk about that at all, but that's your main job, your day job, and it's an important one. You guys have given us some great senators. Ken Cuccinelli, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.